Last week, we talked about the fact that Sarah's origins, who her parents are, and even what her original name is clouded in mystery. And that's why we asked, who is she? And then we also asked, is she being used as a pawn for mercenary purposes? Namely, that by calling her his sister, Avram is in a position to demand a lot of money for her hand in marriage, as it were. And it seems that she is being both used and dishonored for monetary gain. If one wanted to be a devil's advocate, one would say so. We later on hear that Avram becomes quite wealthy as he leaves Egypt. Was he wealthy originally? Was he not wealthy originally? How do we read that line? Later on, I also asked you that it seems that Sarah has a maidservant named Hagar, who's Egyptian. Is this one of the gifts given to her in Egypt when she was taken to Pharaoh's house? Well, it seems that she is being mistreated. She's, of course, a surrogate woman. And then when she gets pregnant, she starts to dishonor or treat Sarah disrespectfully. And she is then, if you like, vate'aneh. Is that torture? What does it mean? Did she deserve this treatment? If not, why does Avram allow it? When he tells Sarah, do with her as you wish, she flees. And you remember the angel finds her on the way and tells her to go back and put herself again under the further mistreatment of Sarah, promising her that she will have a son. His name will be Yishmael. V'hu yiyeh pere adam yado bakol v'yad kol bo al pnei kol echav yishkon. Is that a blessing or a curse? Is this a reward for suffering under the hand of Sarah? How do we treat this? We will find that some of our Mefarshim try to justify Sarah. Some of them rebuke her. We're going to look at all of that together. Now, some of you did go all through all these questions and went on to round two. Round two is that again, after many years, there is a famine in the land again. And Avram and Sarah are compelled this time not to Egypt. They've burned their bridges there. They go to Eretz Plishtim, where again Avram tells Sarah to say that she's his sister. Again, it seems that he is risking her honor to save his own life. Given what happened in Egypt, and given the rebuke that some of our Mefarshim make against his going to Egypt in the first place, why did he repeat this all over again? Then we're told that finally, after so many years, Sarah gives miraculous birth to her son Yitzchak. And after Yitzchak is born, Sarah banishes both Hagar and the son that she had by Avraham, Yishmael. And this time, Hashem says to Avram, who's upset with Sarah's mistreatment of his son, Kol asher tomar lecha Sarah, shma bekola. Is Hashem saying that Sarah was right in the first place? Or is she only right in the second time? What are we supposed to do with this? And why then does Hashem say that she's right? I want to take some of the positions about Sarah's name, because this is crucial for us to understand this. I think we did discuss this a little bit, but I'm going to review again. We have a few interesting positions about who is this woman and why does she seem to have a different name originally. What we're told in the 11th chapter, which I asked you to prepare for last week, Vayikach Avram v'Nachor lahem nashim, Shem Eshet Avram Sarai, v'Shem Eshet Nachor Milka Bat Haran, Avi Milka v'Avi Yiska. Earlier, we were told that Haran bore a son. His name was Lot. No mention at all was made of daughters. And here it seems to suggest that Haran had two daughters, Milcah and Iscah. And Chazal, quoted by Rashi, tells us that this Iscah is none other than Sarai herself. Well, then why aren't we told that openly? And why is her name being changed this way? Medrash Lekach Tov from the 11th century in Greece tells us as follows. Vatihi Sarai Akara Ein La Valad. That in itself seems to be redundant. If she's an Akara, then she doesn't have a child. If she doesn't have a child, it means that she is Akara, or that her husband is an Akara. Why are we redundant and repeating this? It's sufficient to say that she was barren. And he tells us that if you have a statement, and he gives examples throughout the Tanakh, Vatihi Sarai Akara, that she was barren, Ein Lavalad is not the same thing as Lo. Ein means she still doesn't have a child, but she will, Emil Tzashem, have so. Paneach Raza, also from the 11th century, among the Rebbes of Rashi, tells us as follows. Yadua ki Iscah zu Sarah. We're told, we were known that Iscah is Sarah. Ve'im ken Sarah gam hi bat Aran. And when they leave Ukazdim, it says that Terach took Lot, the son of Haran, and Sarah, his daughter-in-law, and doesn't mention anything about her being the daughter of Haran. So he tells us as follows. There are some who would argue, yesh mefarshim, there are some who interpret, that Haran lo haya bno shel Terach mamash. Haran was really not Terach's son, ela bno chogo, but a stepson, the son of his wife. The afal piken kara lo ben, but he called him his son because he raised him. When it mentions Lot, asher gam hu lo haya tzadik kemo Terach, yichaso hakatuv leben bno shel Terach. And then he goes and tells us as follows. Aval Sarah hatzadeket, but Sarah was righteous. Lo ratza liyachasa acharav. He didn't want to mention that she is the daughter of Haran, because Haran is less than righteous. In other words, it's no yichas that she is the daughter of Haran. It turns out then that the Torah is trying to obscure her lineage, where she comes from. In other words, she doesn't come from such great places. Rashi says, Iscah zu Sarah. And why is she called that? He gives us two reasons. One, from the word nesachim, anointed, that everyone would be anointed with her beauty. In other words, she radiated this marvelous beauty that people wanted to bask in that beauty. And furthermore, lashon nisichut, it means nisicha. Nisicha means princess, as does the word Sarah or Sarai. But when she gets a status of a married woman, we now call her Sarai, which also means lashon srarut, which means governance. She's now become the lady. She's not just a princess, but she's been increased in stature. Comes Radak, writing in the 12th century, and he tells us as follows. He says, all of this indicates sheyesh li tmoha. I'm astonished. Lama amar bat Haran velo amar bnot Haran. If it's true that both Milcah and Iscah are the daughters, why does it say bat Haran, the daughter, and not the daughters of Haran? Ulai haita Sarai bat bito shel Terach. Maybe Sarai is not who we think she is. She is his Terach's daughter's daughter, and not the daughter of Haran at all. Ve'afal pi shelo zachar leTerach banot, ulai hayu lo. And though it doesn't mention that he had any daughters, apparently he had it. The fact that it doesn't mention the women doesn't mean that there weren't any women. Comes the Kli Yakar and writes, when we're told that her name was Iscah, and then it was Sarai, and then it becomes Sarah, He says, Avraham haya tafel l'Sara b'nivuah. The great prophecy was not Avraham's. She was the greatest prophetess originally. Al ken kara b'shem Yiska. That's why she was called Yiska, which means the anointed one. Not like Rashi said, where everybody basks in her glow, in her beauty, but rather that the Shechina was anointed on her. Because before she was his wife, she was already Yiska. She had Yichus of her own, not because of who her father was, not because of who her Zayde was or her Babe, but on her own. After her marriage, she, if it were, becomes a little bit obscured. Well, if she's such an important woman all on her own, we now have the problem about why Avram seems to have disrespected her. Disrespected her by putting her honor on the line, allowing her, as it were, to be taken, telling her to lie. And we have various opinions about how this is to be treated. First of all, was it right of him to go down to Egypt in the first place? After all, Hashem told him, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimuladetcha u'mibet avicha. Leave your countrymen, leave your father's home, leave your country and go to wherever I tell you. And he told him that this land, Eretz Canaan, is yours, and I will bless all who bless you. I will make you into a great nation. You will have everything that you need. And yet when hunger comes, he leaves. Comes the Ramban, and first of all, rebukes him for leaving. And he tells us as follows. Veda ki Avraham Avinu chata chet gadol bishgaga. Chas v'sholem, he didn't do this on purpose. He made an error, but he made a big sin in the process. Shehivi ishto hatzadeket b'michshol avon. Mipnei pachado pen yargu, that he put his wife into a possible trap of committing a horrific cardinal sin, gilui arayot, out of his fear that he might be killed. Furthermore, hayalo liftoach be'elokav, he should have trusted his God, sheyatzil oto ve'et ishto ve'et kol asher lo. God would have saved him and would have saved his property and all the people that he took with him. And he had no point in going on his own and taking his own advice. Ki gam yitziyato min ha'aretz, even leaving the country and going to Egypt, avon asher chata, was a sin. Ki ha'elokim berav yavdenu mimavet, for the same God that told him to go will redeem him from hunger during the famine. ועל המעשה הזה נגזר על זרו הגלות בארץ מצרים ביד פרו. And because of his sins, his children needed to suffer to go down to Egypt where they would be enslaved. For במקום המשפט שמה החטא. For where you see judgment coming down, you know that there must have been an underlying sin. If not in that generation, then in previous generations. Goodness gracious! Furthermore, he adds, "Vanachom be'enai." But I also believe, he says, that it wasn't only in Egypt that he said, "She's my sister." Now he's a little bit backtracking. Ki ze darkam lamom etzetam b'Charan. Since they left Charan, wherever they went, he said, "She's his sister." Bekol makom haya omer achotihi. And how do we know this? Later on in chapter 20, he will say, Kasher itu oti Elokim mibeit avi. God made me wander and made me lost when he took me out of my father's house. Why didn't it mention it everywhere? It only went and mentioned it where it became an issue. Up until now, it was not an issue. So he also said when they were in Canaan that she is his sister. And why did he do this? You have to go to the 19th chapter in Vayikra, where it gives you all of the sexual prohibitions, and it tells you, "Kema'aseh eretz Mitzrayim lo tasu, u'kema'aseh eretz Kenan lo tasu." Don't do the deeds, don't act, and don't accept the mores of the land of Egypt, and do not accept the mores of the land of Canaan, and then lists all of the forbidden sexual encounters. Marrying your sister, marrying your mother, having relations with animals, all of those are listed. Those are the toivot, those are the abomination that the Torah forbids, and begins by telling us this was the behavior of the Canaanites, this was the behavior of the Egyptians. And therefore, at least the Ramban in that is justifying the ruse, because the ruse was necessary for survival. He needed to do this. Why? Property rights seem to have been the highest morality there. And to whom did a woman belong? She belonged either to her father as chattel or to her brothers, and they could sell her. And that was accepted. You would not take something that belonged to someone. As far as her husband is concerned, inasmuch as he acquires her, we resolve the problem of property by killing him. Because killing a stranger is less of a moral problem for the Canaanites and the Egyptians than taking a man's property. Now, if it's only her brother, we can simply sell her or buy her, and that is resolved. A husband can't sell his wife, and therefore the only way to take a wife away from him is by killing him. Abarbanel, after citing the Ramban, comes blasting against him, and he goes and tells us as follows. Shtei sibot hiniu le'Avraham laredet Mitzrayim. He says there were two reasons that motivated and compelled Avram to go down to Egypt. One, that he believed that the commandment of God was to live in Eretz Canaan, but that did not mean that he could not go outside of the country for business, to buy food. He wasn't going down to Egypt to settle. After all, it says he came down there lagurba. He only went there for a little while. And that was never forbidden. So there's nothing wrong with going down. Furthermore, the second reason is that God's commandments are such that if you fulfill them, you will live by them and not die by them. And here there is a great famine. And under such great famine, what do? We stay alive. It's not a mitzvah to stay in Eretz Yisrael if you're going to die for it. There are only three sins for which one should die rather than violate them. And they are murder, avodah zarah, idolatry, and gilui arayot, forbidden sexual encounters. Oh my! Can't we argue against then his behavior by saying that she's his sister when she's his wife? Hasn't he put her in danger? If that's the case, what would we argue? That by saying that she's his sister and sending her off, he has actually divorced her. She's no longer his wife. The Ramban argues, but in order for her to be divorced, he would say that she needs to agree to it. And he says as follows, V'yira'eh mipshat ha'ktuvim. It seems that if you read simply the text, Sarah lo kibla le'alo malkin. Sarah never agreed to say that she's his sister. He said it, not Sarah. What happened? They saw this beautiful woman. They took her. Did anybody ask, are you married? He said, she's my sister. Did she say, yep, he's my brother? Not at all. Lo shalu bahem klal im ishto o achoto. Nobody asked any questions. They took her. V'hi shatka. She kept quiet. V'lo higida ki ishto hi. And she didn't say that she's his wife. Ve'Avraham siper me'atzmo ki achoto hi. Only Avraham on his own said she's his sister. And therefore, what did they do? That's why they were good to him. Good to him means what? They didn't kill him. Does it say that they actually gave him anything? What does it say instead? What is the actual language?
When he leaves, he takes his stuff back with him. But it doesn't say that that stuff is given to him by Paro.
Does it ever say, Vayiten lo, and he gave him Tzon u'Bakar, Shfachim, Avadim u'Shfachot? Does it ever say that? That he gave him? We're jumping to that conclusion. Some argue he had them already. What did he do? What was good? And who was good to him? Who was good to him? Paro? Or could it have been Hashem who was good to him? And that's why he has Tzon u'Bakar, Avadim u'Shfachot. He's got all of that, and he has a responsibility to all of them in order to feed them. He has this incredible household. It kol hanefesh asher asu. Because you remember that they left Haran and he took with him kol harechush asher rachashu v'kol hanefesh asher asu. So he has all of these people on his head that he needs to feed them. And so therefore we need to justify his behavior. His behavior is that you ain somchim al hanes. We cannot rely on miracles. He needs to feed them. But it is not clear. It does not say the Hashem heitiv. And it also doesn't say uparo heitiv, does it? So you're left not knowing if what he did was good or if what he did was questionable. We don't know how we stand here. Why would we leave it so absolutely ambiguous? Comes the Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch and tells us as follows. Kalanu lomar zot bemabat leachor, after he quotes Ramban. In retrospect, we can be very judgmental. It's easy for us to say he shouldn't have endangered his wife, he shouldn't have prostituted her, he should not have enriched himself on her account, he shouldn't have gone down to Egypt in the first place. לאחר הניסיון העצום שעברנו בהיסטוריה שלנו. Yeah, we've gone through a great deal in our own history, so we can look in retrospect and make judgments. And what can we find out? We can say, שלוחי מצווה אינן ניזוקים. People who are fulfilling God's commandments are not harmed. Yeah, Chazal tell us so. If you keep Shabbos, your parnosa is not going to be hurt. If you do God's will, you'll be safe. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashgiach al Ohavav. The Rebbeinu Shalom watches over those that love him. Umagen al Osei Retzono, and he protects those who do his will. Always have there been people who actually suffered because they were Shomrei Torah mitzvahs? Were there good people who loved God, who suffered, who were martyred? Of course.
Yes.
And you see, Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch is writing this before World War II. Ach Avraham v'tze'etza'av nizkeku adayin nilmod hakol minisyonam. Avraham and his children all need to learn this hard by their own experience. Le'Avraham lo haya dugma shel Avraham acher, achar shekadam lo. Avraham didn't have an example of an Avraham who came before him. He's being tested again and again and again. And if he's making, quote, mistakes, says Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch, it's the mistakes that we're supposed to learn from. But he could not possibly learn from them. He needs to go through a great deal before he can find out that God will stand by him. And if he does, so does Sarah. Furthermore, there's a better issue. Ha'iruim b'mitzrayim u'be'eretz plishtim. The events that occurred in Egypt and later in Eretz Plishtim mar'im al avirat ha'pritzut she'shalta be'arzot eile. You need to understand the immorality, the promiscuity that reigned in those countries. Isha pnuya haita betucha yoter miisha nesua. An unmarried woman, an available woman, had greater security to keep alive than a married woman. Bein shesara nechsheva lenesua, ubein shenechsheva lepnuya. Whether she was considered married or considered available, kvoda haya natun besakana, her honor and her very body were endangered the entire time. Ulamasakana liisha nesua gdola yoter. However, the danger to a married woman was greater. Hem yargu et habaal viikhu et haisha. They'll kill him and take her. Now, is she going to be taken one way or another? Does everybody agree? And the answer is yes. So it wasn't like you could save her honor right now. The only thing that we can do now is save Avram's life. If that's the case, Sarah is sacrificing her body, herself, her honor, for him. Zot habrera she'amda bifnei Avram kesh'amad likanes lemitzrayim. That was the choice. And it was damned if you do, damned if you don't. If he stays alive, does he have a better chance of saving her? And the answer is yes. But if he's dead, there's nothing he can do anymore. So he's not only saving his own neck. A decision is made to keep alive because he can then perhaps save her as well. If not before she's been raped, then at least after the fact. And what happens is, Rabbi Shimshon Refai Lihirsch wants to understand that we are in a very comfortable position to make these judgments, whereas they're living with the consequences of them right then and there, having no history beforehand to know what might happen. What does God's protection mean? After all, it's Hashem that also promised them that they would have children. And where are the kids? How long do you wait? Which brings us to the 16th chapter. Vesara eshet Avram lo yaldalo. But Sarah, the wife of Avram, did not give him children for a very, very long time. And so if that's the case, what should we do? Wait for a miracle? It's too late now. She's gone through menopause. It's finished. She's given up hope. What do we do now? Vela shifcha mitzrit ushma Hagar. And she happens to have a shifcha. So she's going to give Avram a surrogate. Vatomer Sarai el Avraham. Hine na. Now what's the hine na? What is na? Na can mean now. Na can mean please. But if you say hine na, then I know they translate hine often as behold. Hinena, here, please, here. Atzarani Hashem miledet. The Ribbono Shel'Olam has kept me from giving birth. Where is the lack of faith and in whom? To Sarai, the one that is not going to have a baby, is she. Who received a promise that he would have many children? Her husband. And therefore, if he's relying on her to bring him those children, she is, if you like, blocking the fulfillment of God's promises. So she's going to get out of the way. She believes that the one that's not worthy is not Avram, it's her. It's not that Sarah lacked faith in God. It's that Sarah deemed that she is not worthy of having children. And the proof of the pudding is that nothing has happened after all these years. Take my maid, Ulai ibane mimena. Maybe I will be built through her. Please notice the relationship of the word livnot, to be built, and the word banim, sons. The notion is that a surrogate child, an adopted child, is also a way of me building my character and having something remain of me after I die. Something will be left that I built. And what you're told here is, Vayishma Avram lekol Sarai. He heard. Now there's a difference between Lishmoa bekol and Lishmoa lekol. Lishmoa bekol means to obey. Ulishmoa lekol means to he hears her out. Does he do anything? It's her idea. Does he do anything? Absolutely not. He listens to her pain. He hears why she's saying it, but he does nothing. Vatikach Sarai. So Sarai took et Hagar HaMitzrit. And again, you're told, Vatikach Sarai eshet Avram. Don't you know she's Avram's wife? But she did it as his wife, as the one that loves him, as the one that cares about him. She gave him Hagar HaMitzrit. She remained his wife. They remained intimate with each other. But she gave him Hagar the Egyptian. Shifchata. And again we're repeating that the status as her maid. And if it's her maid, it's her property. And therefore, she gives it to him. Miketz Eser Shanim Leshevet Avram Be'eretz Canaan. After 10 years of living in Eretz Canaan, 10 years they waited there for God to fulfill the promise that he told them, I will make a great nation out of you. And gave it to him, this time, not only as a surrogate, not as a concubine, but as a wife, as a second wife. Maybe it's a pastnisht, it's inappropriate, it's not honorable for her husband to just take this woman and father a child with her without marrying her. Vayavoel Hagar v'tahar. So she got pregnant right away. Vatereki harata. And when she saw that she immediately conceived, vatakel gvirta be'eneha. Her mistress became kal be'eneha. Please notice that that's the root of the word klala. A curse is a denigration, to take someone and bring them down. And her mistress became down in her eyes. She now saw her mistress as less worthy than she, because she's going to become now numero uno. And they're going to switch roles. Vatomer Sarai el Avram, chamasi alecha. And Sarah gets angry at Avram and says, what's been done to me, my abuse, is on your head. I gave you my handmaiden, put her into your bosom. And no sooner did she get pregnant, ve'kal be'neha. I became denigrated in her eyes. Yishpat Hashem be'ni u've'necha. May God judge between us. Boy, is she angry. It means that she's angry at Avram for doing what? He sees that Hagar is mistreating her mistress and disrespecting her, not only as equals, but now that she's the superior. And he kept quiet. And that's why she's angry at him. Vayomer Avram el Sarai, hine shifchatech biyadech, asila atov beinayich. Vateaneha Sarai. So Sarah did what? What is inui? What is inui?
She abused her.
She abused her. Okay, maze ani? La'anot. She responded in kind, as Hagar had been treating her. But there is a double entendre here. And it seems to be mistreated, treated her harshly, right? Or brought her down. Antala, she responded to her in kind. So she fled. How do we treat Sarah's behavior? Come the Mefarshim and tell us as follows. Comes the Ktav v'Kabbalah, Harav Mecklenburg. Harav Mecklenburg is writing in the 19th century. After he brings all of the sources and tells us as follows. Sarah got angry at Avram for the following reasons. So long as this woman was under my control, she treated me with respect. The moment I gave it to her, you, put her in your embrace, she denigrates me. She dishonors me. And that's why Avram says, okay, I'm putting her back the way she was before. No longer my wife. You can have her again as your servant. Comes he and explains, what did she do? Hishtabdaba bekoshi yotel. She had her work hard, extra hard. And on what basis does he say that? On the basis of what the Egyptians did to us. The language there is also the language of Inui. comes Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and wants to moderate our sense. And he says, Ta'aneh comes from the root to give an answer to someone or to be dependent on them. Aneh is to have somebody feel that they are dependent on you. Make them feel vulnerable. And therefore, what did Sarah do? She put her back into the role of a shifra where she had been originally. That's all. In other words, she had forced her to submit. Comes Radak and tells us as follows. Astaima yoter midai. Ve'avda ba baperech. Yeah, she went a little too far and she made her do shameful, hard work, humiliating work. Ve'efshar, and it's possible she'aita makah ota u'mekalelet ota. And maybe she beat her, and maybe she cursed her, until she couldn't tolerate it anymore and fled. Comes Ramban and tells us, Chata imenu be'inui hazeh. Our mother had sinned with this abuse. V'gam Avraham, and even Avraham sinned here by letting her do it. And that's why it says, Vayishma Hashem Elyonia. Hashem heard her abuse. V'natan la ben sheyeh pere Adam. And he gave her a son who would do what? He would torture and he would debase the children of Avram v'Sara with all kinds of abuse. Back to the notion that nothing is an accident, anything bad happens, must be a punishment. So my question to you is, then why does the Malach tell her to go back? Why does the angel say, go back to your mistress and put yourself under her reign? Go back and I will bring you a son and his name will be Yishmael. And this Yishmael will be a Pere Adam. So I want you to tell me, what is Pere Adam? How do they translate it? He's a wild guy. And his hand is on everybody and everybody's hand is on him, which means he's been perpetual strife, right? Except there's one thing in Hebrew. In Hebrew, where does the adjective go? How do you say good girl?
It's backwards.
Yalda tova. So if he's a wild man, how should we say it? Adam pere. Pere Adam does not mean that. Pere is an untamed horse, a mustang or a donkey, one that's not been broken. And therefore, if you look at it that way, what has she been promised? You go back and submit yourself. But your son will be what? He will not be tamed. He will be free. And he does not take reins. And no saddle can be put on him. And he will do what? His hand will be on everyone and everyone will be with him. But ultimately, what will he do? He will reign over all of his brethren. All of the children of Keturah. Yishmael will become the chieftain of all of the children that come from Hagar and Keturah, which means that he will be a prince. And at the end of the parasha, you're told about the 12 princes that come out of all of the children that come out of Yishmael. If that's the case, Per Adam does not mean wild man. It means free, unbroken, uncontrolled. If that's the case, is this a punishment or is this a reward?
It's the punishment for the way Hagar was treated.
Yishmael is a punishment to whom? Not to her. He's her comeuppance.
To Sarah for the abuse she gave.
Ah, that's the way Ramban treats it. You're right. He's going to take vengeance against what was mistreated. So why does the angel send her back?
So there is no punishment shown for Avraham?
Are they not Avraham's and Sarah's children? And if that's the case, why is it that the second time when she finally has a child and wants to banish Hagar and her son, God tells Avraham, Kol asher tomar lecha Sarah, shma bekola. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. Do you see the problem that we're dealing with here? There's no black or white here, is there? Things are pretty gray in between. Where does the fault lie? Where is the fatal, if you like, mistake that leads to the tragic outcomes? Ramban argues that Sarah had failed because she tried to be superhuman. She thought that she could give another woman to her husband. She thought that somehow she could overcome natural feelings of jealousy and to play second fiddle because she tried, we're told, Al tiyeh tzadik harbe, don't try to be too much of a tzadik, lest, God forbid, then what ends up happening is you go to the other extreme. And Rambam would treat it that way because she had gone to one extreme, she ended up going to the other extreme. But then why does God say, kick her out? What's going on? I believe that Hagar's behavior at the very end explains to us what Sarah saw at the very beginning. What did Sarah see at the very end? Round two, after her son is born. Vatere Sarah et ben Hagar ha-Mitzrit metzachek. She sees the son of Hagar the Egyptian. I mean, we already know where Hagar comes from. How many times are you going to tell me the Egyptian, the Egyptian, the Egyptian? And why don't we call him Yishmael? Why do we not call him simply by his name? Instead, we call him the son of Hagar the Egyptian. Doing what? Metzachek. What was the mockery? What was the laughter? What did she see him doing? And Hagar put him up to it, because otherwise you would call him Yishmael. You wouldn't call him the son of Hagar ha-Mitzrit. She sent Yishmael to do something. What was it? Rashi will cite this at the beginning of Parshas Toldos, when it tells us, Eile Toldot Yitzchak. Avraham holid it, Yitzchak. Oh my God, we already know that. These are the children, the generations of Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak, blah, 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 blah. And it goes on and on and on, repeating. And Avraham and Rashi there says that the Torah is again stressing that Yitzchak is none other than Avraham's son. Why? Because if you look at the way the stories are told, we have as follows. We have chapter 19, Hashem changes Sarah's name and Avraham's name and tells him to make a brit milah, to circumcise himself, and promises him that the child that will inherit and will be the legacy of what God had promised Avraham is none other than the child that Sarah will bear. So he knows that Sarah's going to have a child. We then have betwixt and between a famine again, and they go down to Eretz Plishtim. And there Sarah is taken to the house of Avimelech for one night. And we're told that nothing happened, because God made sure nothing would happen. Next thing you know, comes the next chapter, and what are you told? God remembered, and she got pregnant. Yeah. All these years with Avram, nada. One night at the fertility clinic in Plishtim, next thing you know, she's pregnant. Who would want to make sure that we delegitimize Yitzchak? Only one woman would want to do that, Hagar. And Hagar would say, hey, I've been sleeping in with all these years. He can't have been the father because I got pregnant right away. And in between, nothing. Nothing.
Then she
which proves what? That who is incapable of fathering children anymore? Avraham.
Avraham.
Yeah. So Rashi there quotes the Medrash. Hayu leitzanei hador omrim mi Avimelech nitabra Sarah. The clowns of the generation laughed and said, you know who's the father? Avimelech. Who are the clowns that are laughing? Who would put such an idea in a 15 or a 17-year-old boy, depending on which version you want to take? Only one person would do this, Hagar. Her behavior at the end proves what it meant, vatakel gvirta be'eneha, that her mistress became light in her eyes or cursed in her eyes. Hagar is not only going to be equal to Sarah, she wants to be
greater
mistress and the only one. Ki lo yirash, for he will not, Benama, the son of this servant, will not disinherit my son by delegitimizing Yitzchak. and saying that he's the only one. That's why God tells him, Kol asher tomar lecha Sara, shma bekola. So unfortunately, a tragedy is born. But a tragedy is born from what? From a lack of faith in God or a lack of faith in herself? And as a result, Sarah is willing to take on all of the curses of history on herself, but to save her son. So later on, you will hear Rivka say, tell her son to cheat his father. And she says, and he says, if I'll do that, I won't bring a blessing on myself, I'll bring a curse. And she says, Kilelatacha alai, I'll take your curses. Curses are on me. Listen to what I'm telling you to do. And in that sense, they become role models for our survival. Because with imperfect knowledge, in a rather hostile world, Jewish women were willing to tolerate the fact that they were denigrated, treated as all the jokes about Jewish mothers, tigresses that would do anything for their kids, cheat and lie their way through it to save them. That's us. And she does it for her son. And earlier, she did it for the man she loved, thinking that she would not have a son. Only it got to be too much, a little too much.